Now.
It's 11 o'clock.
Wow.
It's recording, isn't it?
I love it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's working great.
That's pretty slick. Wow, that's a neat, nifty little screen you've got there.
As long as this stays on, I
feel pretty good. As long as it stays on. As long as those electrons are moving, even as slow as electrons move through wire.
I like this mandolin science jam.
I do too. It adds a whole level of scientific nuance to the conversation. Whatever that means.
Doppler effect. We got it
go,
all.
Go, maracas, go.
We have it all here on Radio Science News. I just love his little... What was that? Oh, no. Nothing to be... Don't worry.
It's the mine. FCC calling. Going, hey, you can't possibly be doing episode number 800. I thought we closed you down.
Did you clear mandolin music with the NPR before
yes.
you started this? Yes, we did.
Did you? Yes, of course.
Clearance
we did.
For takeoff.
Hey. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Robert Strong.
You are listening to and being a participant in
That's right.
Radio Science News this morning. This is August 21st, 2021, and as I just said, this is episode number 800 in a series. I was just doing the math because I love doing math, and if you played Radio Science News episodes every hour on the hour, it would be over a month of episodes.
It would be over.
It would be over, yes.
It's
it would certainly be
that's
over.
It, guys.
It would be like 33 plus days.
We're pulling the plug.
Of
I know.
Just nonstop Radio Science News. That's just astounding. For those prime number fans out there, any number that ends in a zero, unless you've got some interesting knowledge of mathematics
that I do not
possess, that is not a prime number. The factors are 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 5 and 5, or 2 to the 5th and 5 to the 2nd.
I love when you talk
interesting
science.
Interesting symmetry
really...
there.
Yeah, there is.
Yes.
Wow.
Symmetrical
symmetry. Factorial symmetry.
Factorial
like
symmetry.
It.
So, 2 to the 5th times 5 to the 2nd. I love that. I think that's pretty cool. So, we're going to get started.
Let's roll.
I'm going to take our listeners to my favorite page on the internet, which is the Smart Center. So if you follow me, if you're in a Tesla self-driving
no,
car,
no. Oh, you can still do it.
You should put your hands on the wheel because I was noticing that they don't seem to be self-driving as much as you'd probably like.
Listen,
them
I'm
to
gonna,
be
I'm just gonna, self-driving. I'm gonna admonish them with the lyrics from The Doors.
Okay.
Keep your eyes on the road and your hands upon the wheel.
I think it's a great idea.
That's all I can say.
If you want your car to be the other driver, that's fine, but you should be the primary driver.
Yeah.
If you're going to be in a car taking the responsibility, you should have your feet ready and your hands on the wheel and or at least near the wheel and you know
unless you're a backseat driver that's what
yeah
I'm
well you shouldn't be in the backseat of a Tesla as the only passenger.
Well
I'm just saying
I'm not gonna do it.
Real
not,
bad idea at present.
Not gonna.
Not,
not wouldn't be prudent.
Not gonna no. Somebody needs to the AI needs to be a little more I.
Oh I like that.
Before I start doing that. So if you would, if you could pull over, or if you've got hands free, you go to www.smartcenter.org, and when you're there, I'm there. Okay, there we go.
I see the T-shirts right there, hanging in the middle
the
there.
The trifecta rainbow T-shirts there that in triplicate say Radio Science News. Between Radio Science News and International Space Station.
Oh, I choose Radio Science
we're
News.
We're going to go to Radio Science News today. Yeah, just, because that's fun.
Well, but you're going to find out that when we get to Radio Science News Launchpad that the ISS is also listed there.
Along
with
doubt.
Other interesting stuff. And I'm
no
going to tell you, just because I know you're an early riser.
I am an early
if
riser.
If you will take 30 seconds, I'm going to click on the International Space Station for
okay,
you here.
Which is...
It's right there in that top line.
Oh, okay.
I always
okay,
keep
so
it there for my convenience.
So it's not in the in the things we're going to do
it
today.
It gets bold print.
Okay, so space station right above the call-in 1 through 4. Okay.
Now, the only reason why I'm doing it very quickly is that if you are, as many friends I know, many of my friends are farmers, I'm saying. There are, this week, something, I've not seen this one for a long time. 7-minute viewing of the International Space Station at a maximum height of 78 degrees. But here's the problem. All of these, and I don't consider this a problem because 6:06 a.m., 5:20 a.m., all of these, there are a whole bunch of really good viewings. There's one tomorrow that's really wonderful, six minutes.
Amazing.
But all you have
these
to do...
These are really long.
Well, and that's... I just wanted to call people's attention to that because if you are an early riser... you and the chickens can watch this. That's if assuming you have chickens.
I don't have chickens, but I know that you do.
I do.
So here's Sunday, August 22nd, 6:06 a.m., 6 minutes, maximum height, 24 degrees. That's not great, but
look at Tuesday.
But Tuesday morning, 6:08 a.m., a 7-minute, the International Space Station will be in the sky for 7 minutes visible, maximum height, 78 degrees.
That's really high.
So it appears 10 degrees above the southwest, disappears 10 degrees above the northeast.
Seven minutes.
And
of
then
transit
on
time.
Wednesday, the Another next morning, a little earlier, 5:23, 5 minute, maximum height 43 degrees. These are really good.
Yeah, and just for your, since as you are math people out there, you're assuming that, say, 43 degrees, well, how that's basically...
About halfway up the sky.
Yeah, you're thinking almost 45 degrees. Yeah. 90 means it's straight overhead. So anyway, I didn't want to spend too much time on that because I noticed that when I was... Because I always like to look...
ISS alerts. That's fantastic.
We've got stuff about COVID school. We've got stuff about Congress. We've got Abbott. Do you remember Abbott and Costello, don't you?
Oh, I certainly do.
Well, this isn't quite as funny as Abbott.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Abbott. Okay, then there's this Regeneron.
Regeneron.
Now this is one you may not be familiar with. Ivermectin.
I don't know ivermectin.
It's new. It's a new hair cream with ivermectin. We're going to talk about ivermectin, and there's a lot of these things. I have these up here for you to look at and think about. If we were to discuss them too much, Robert and I might go off the rails because some of this stuff is a little irritating. Like the feed store, I know, Robert, you have
feed stores down at
Tractor Supply a lot.
Constantly,
getting stuff for your tractor. There's some cool stuff from the Perseverance, the Mars rover.
I find that fascinating that you've got the Perseverance and then
next
Rolls
to a feed
Royce.
Store. Well, the Rolls Royce story, this is going to be an interesting side view because I came up with this interesting story from Rolls Royce because it was on one of the sites that's following the ECAT.
Okay.
And they were wondering if this effort by Rolls Royce was a partnership thing. Now, I'm saying, you know, don't jump to conclusions, but there is something.
But there may be.
There's interesting stuff here. The rest of the stuff, I just found a bunch of really cool stories.
Fish fins, rattlesnakes,
Subaru, Iron Moon.
Iron Moon.
I love that band, don't you? They're a big hit.
They're
a big hit. I Would Crater for You. Do you remember that one? Iron Moon.
Rayon. Yeah.
This is so great. This thing about the Denisovans is a really piece of interesting information. Since I was into archaeology, the page also popped up something about Etzanoa, which has been a lost archaeologist site that they think that they have been able to, they think they're on to where it is out in Kansas. You know, and again, it's another huge city of ancient Americans that they knew was there. The Spanish mentioned it, and then that was lost. It's kind of like sounds like the beginning of another Indiana Jones movie, except it's actually real. And then there's one here if we possibly get to photonic.
Okay.
It would take another 2 hours, of course, for you to explain it to me first and then for me to boil it down into a discernible stuff. I'll tell you what, because we're going to jump into a few of the COVID things first, I want to just go to the chart.
Let's do the chart.
The chart at the end of the radiosciencenews.org page, and all of these things are live links. Whenever you're listening to the show, either the live stream, which sadly we are not doing this morning because my computer died on me, and we're just recording live to be furthered onto the Wheeling's community radio and the NPR station up in Connecticut, WHDD Robin Hood Radio. All that information is on the page radioscience.org.
Now this is interesting. This took me to the Texas Health and
there
Human Services.
There you go, T4 Texas. Texas Public Schools COVID-19 data.
So why are we in Texas?
Well, I decided that one of the things that's tough, first of all, these charts are really nice little straightforward line charts.
They are nice.
That I'm thinking, okay, I want to say that, like, for people in Texas, maybe even the governors in Texas or things like that, I really want them to come look at this stuff and understand it.
COVID-19 cases in Texas public schools.
Right. Okay.
The one on the left, cumulative positive
student
cases, new weekly COVID-19 positive student cases. So on August 7th, just over 1,000 cases, probably 1,100, 1,200 cases.
So we're really talking about just a week, a change in a
15th,
week, right?
15th, essentially, we're looking at...
4729, yeah. So this would be as of the 15th, and if I'm looking at this
we're
right...
We're looking at...
Okay, that's that has the 3K. They don't show the 4K at the top.
My little...
Doesn't show the 4.
No, it doesn't show a number... But I'm going to estimate that it's in the 4,000s.
And I'm going to say, tragic information, not to scale.
So we're looking at
4729 as of that day.
At essentially a fourfold increase.
Well, and what is that, over like a year or a month, or what is that? Oh, it's a week.
That's a week.
Okay.
From August 17th to August 15th, cumulative, the one on the right-hand
that's
side,
the
cumulative
staff, yeah.
Positive. Staff cases. We've got what looks like about 1,300 on the 7th to 2,000.
Yeah, and this is...
So that's okay. A pretty significant increase, too.
Yeah, that is. That's... Yeah, that almost looks like it's about at 12... It almost looks like it's at 1,250 and then went up to 3.
So that's a 1.6 times increase in 1 week.
Yeah. Cumulative and cumulative.
Wow.
Okay, now while you're looking at that, I'm looking at my page. Scroll so that you can get the bottom. There's a little bit of bottom information.
All righty.
Okay, so.
Total student enrollment as of January.
Well, let's assume that there.
Okay.
This is the. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I just want to look at this, and I'm going to ask your opinion whether you consider this significant, because we're looking at I'm just going to call it roughly 30,000. Right? Wait a minute, what is that number? 29. Where's the recall?
It's 292,000.
Okay. Yeah, because they...
Wait. I'm so sorry. They have their comma in the wrong place.
Yeah, so which is
They're saying 29,000.
It's got to be 292,000.
I bet it's 292,000. They've got their comma in the wrong place.
So I feel better now.
So if you do the math, 4,729 students... that have a positive COVID response in that week, in the last week.
Just at a week.
Compared to the total student enrollment, that's 1.62%.
Yeah. So, so I just want to look at that. There's other information on this page, and if you look, you can view a map, you can do all kinds of
disturbed.
Stuff. If you have any questions,
so we're looking
you can...
at over 1.6% of the students.
Yeah, this is the students.
Now, of course, during that week have come up positive with COVID-19 in public schools in Texas. Now, if 1.6% of the students in Wheeling, West Virginia were coming up positive with COVID-19, I can't imagine the school board, the superintendent, everybody else not going, okay, guys, this is a little over the top. We really need to do a mask mandate.
Could be serious.
We're
going to see what I think Ohio County here in West Virginia, I think, is already implying that they are going to do. Marshall County is waiting for further. I think what they're looking at is what the CDC and the governor of the state. But anyway, this is significant stuff.
Yeah,
the big deal here is that we're talking about students going back to
school.
In
a week. This is a significant weak stuff.
And there's a lot. I'm going to go back to the launch pad of science, because part of what anybody who is associated with school as a teacher or a student or the parent of a student, on and on, Science News did put up a really nice little thing that says 6 answers to parents' COVID-19
this is the COVID
questions.
School.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this was put up just this last week. And again, we're not going to
go through this bit by bit, because I, one of the things I know that does drive, what drives me a little crazy, is to see stuff over and over again.
Yeah.
And I need to know where I can find it. This is where you can, this is a really good page, you know, how to be kept safe in the classroom. And they list, if you scroll down, they have a whole bunch of things. What else can schools do? And this, the thing is, this is from a page where people are interested in science, so you may not see all these things, you know, but scroll through this and use this as part of your information.
Okay, so one
to
of
the
questions,
the
how
choices.
Can children be kept safe in the classroom? Great idea. I'm going to let you folks look through that. Beside masking, what else can schools do? Excellent. That's what we need to do. Are disruptive close contact quarantines necessary if everyone is wearing a mask? What a great question. Another question, what if masks are optional at our child's school?
Those are the things everybody's wrestling
with. Those are things people are asking. And does the Delta variant change things? I don't think we need to,
yes,
to do a lot of conversation there. What should we do when our kid gets a cold?
Yeah, so anyway,
well,
this is...
Well, frankly, if you remember way back when, before COVID-19, when your kid got a cold, you're supposed to keep them at home, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what they always told you? Everybody, there was no, oh, send them to school.
Let's immunize everybody.
Nobody ever said that.
Let's try to get more people. Anyway, a lot of good stuff there. I'm going to jump into, a lot of this has to be put into context. The biggest context, and I don't want to beat everybody over the head with all the COVID stuff that's going on. So we're going to try to maybe blast through some of this.
Okay.
If you, again, so our advice right up front is, hey, get your vaccine and wear a mask.
And as soon as possible.
Do things, because as everybody, even the people who claim that they don't want their freedom abridged, the way to get back to freedom is to do these things for one another, for each other.
Speaking of which, I was talking to my good friend Ted Bratstrom last
yeah.
night on the phone. I have been not feeling great lately, and he called to check on me and see how I'm doing. And we got talking about various things, and I said, so how's the COVID going on in Hawaii where he is? And he's a school teacher type, and he said that that Hawaii has mandated all teachers be vaccinated, have their second vaccination,
not just the one,
by
but, yeah.
October 15th, which means, folks, you have to have your first vaccination September 15th. So here is Hawaii going, look, we're not sending our kids to school with unvaccinated adults. That's just not going to happen. We've got enough problems with the COVID problems. And by the way, COVID is starting to explode in Hawaii. Hawaii, folks, is not on its fifth wave like we are here in West Virginia. They're on their first wave.
Oh,
they're on their first wave. They've been able to keep it down to this point, but the Delta variant has
it's
sort
changed
of
so many
swamped
things.
Them. Yeah.
Well, we need all of, so let's take a look. You know, talk about people that you would trust or you think should understand things. This is a story about Congress. Three senators test positive for COVID, bringing the total number of cases in Congress to 72. Wait a minute. The entire Congress is what? Well, let's see. If you count
isn't it like
the Senate and the House, it's 500.
So like 550? Something
yeah,
like
I'm thinking the yeah. Well, let's call it that.
Okay.
Wow, 72. That's a big. I think they actually. Oh, here somewhere down there they actually mentioned that it's a high percentage. I just don't know. And the other.
So if it's 72 divided by, let's say 550, that's 13.1%.
Yeah, it's pretty high percent.
That's like that's like one out of eight.
Yeah, that's better than your chances with the lottery, right? I think so. This is sort of a lottery. Okay, and the thing that I found interesting...
It's a lottery, all right.
Here's the interesting thing is these are gentlemen who have all been vaccinated.
Every single one of them?
These folks, and the part that's interesting is Roger Wicker, Angus King, and Senator John Hickenlooper, one a Democrat. This is what also is interesting. One a Republican, one a Democrat, and
one
an
independent. Yeah.
And, of course, I think I saw somebody make the comment that, well, this clearly shows that it's not only bipartisan, but COVID-19, especially since we're probably looking at a breakthrough infection from the variant, which these gentlemen will probably absolutely survive because it's not a big, you know. That's the big deal.
The deal is that they are going to survive because they have the best health
and they have the best health care.
They do have the best.
And they'll probably get Regeneron and all the other great Cadillac treatments.
Tasty.
Okay, so just as we blast from this story back to the launch pad, I'm going to say I also saw, I think Lindsey Graham came out, and I'm hopeful that one of the things many people have said is when they start seeing their friends and relatives get it, they'll be concerned. Well, I'm thinking, well, what do you say when you start seeing yourself get it? You know, maybe you'll take things more seriously.
Yeah.
Now let's look at this.
Really
governor.
Look in the mirror.
Let's look at this governor of Texas, Abbott. And again, I don't want to spend too much time because the story here, and I'm using this more to set up the next story than anything.
Okay.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott tests positive for COVID-19, and he's being treated with Regeneron. Well, that's really good.
That's certainly nice.
Well, it's important because you and I have been talking about the various antibody treatments that are available. University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, as a matter of fact, came up with another really great one that was inhalable. It was a story that we did like months and months and months ago. And I'm not gonna get frustrated by saying I wonder whatever happened to all
that.
It
says Abbott, who is fully vaccinated against the virus, was not experiencing symptoms as of Tuesday evening and is being treated with Regeneron's monoclonal antibody treatment. Statement said Governor Greg Abbott today tested positive for COVID-19 virus. The statement said the governor has been testing
daily.
Today was the first positive test results.
Okay, which means that he, depending on when the results would show up, that he's been.
So if you're so concerned about this, that you would.
For yourself, you mean?
That you would test positive. I mean, that you would be testing daily.
Right.
So 7 times a week, 30 times a month. Okay, I don't know anybody that's had 7 tests. Okay, this guy gets tested 7 times
actually,
a week,
yeah.
And yet has the audacity and bold-faced nerve to go, you don't have to wear a mask. I don't care about you because I'm safe.
Well, and I'm just going to say that one of the clear things is that
this just irritates me no end.
Well, if you thought that irritated you.
Oh, this really irritates me.
Oh, wait till we get to the next story. You're going to be really, I want you to take a couple breaths here.
Is this not the guy where people literally froze to death because of the electricity? Where Texas has coal power, oil power, gas power, wind power,
southern part of
nuclear power. It's got solar power.
Wow.
It makes so much electricity it gives it away, and yet you screwed things up so bad that people are freezing to death.
Well, let's just see what you're saying is you may see a pattern.
There's definitely a pattern.
Like I said, you have to force yourself to be really calm on this next story.
Take a deep breath.
There you go.
Out the mouth.
So this is a story, and this is on several different.
Okay. Are we doing Regeneron?
Greg Abbott. Do you know Greg Abbott? Oh, we were just talking about Greg
I think
Abbott.
We were just talking about
and
him.
And, of course, Ron DeSantis. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what's interesting. The basic gist of this thing is that it appears that they're using Regeneron to make the pandemic worse, not better. Now I'm going. What would that mean?
Let me
translate a little bit for you.
How could you be taking this drug?
No, wait. See, here's where I'm going to say you're being less nuanced than you should be.
Yes, I guess
so.
Here it is.
The thing that you may or may not have seen, because I've been following this and I found this a little odd. You and I, you know, somebody even castigated us, not that it hurt that bad, for sometimes, you know, looking for angles that related to like the stock market or people financing this and that. Long story short here, we have the Texas governor and we have especially the Florida governor,
right.
Where as you do look and I look, people go, what are they doing? They're hurting their own people. They're spreading the. Well, here's the real deal. If you look at what's happening now, especially in Florida, but in Texas, these guys are advocating. Well, and you'll know that they're setting up all these little clinics in the bottom of parking garages.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Their thought is, you don't need to vaccinate people, what you're going to do is you're going to treat them with Regeneron because the federal government is providing it free to the public.
Oh, and what does that cost?
Well, it costs a lot. But now that, see, that's not so bad.
And wait.
I'm going to see
Follow the money.
So I'm going to see if you.
So who owns
Well, there's a Regeneron is a company, REGN, on the stock market. Well,
so who owns the stock is what I'm asking.
Oh, that's one thing.
Because if your goal is to make people sick so that they use the Regeneron,
the stock has gone up like in the past 2 weeks. It's gone up 20 or 30% because they've started setting up in Florida and in Texas. So they're actually
Regeneron clinics.
I'm not arguing with monoclonal antibodies because they should have been used from day one.
And
they should be available to everyone.
It should be free.
Yeah. And
But you should be taking the COVID-19 vaccine so you don't have to use it.
Well, but if you did that, you might knock the sales of Regeneron.
Then your stocks will go down.
So let me give you the final part of it, and then we're going to move on, because when you know this, basically, DeSantis is... He is one of the huge, his maybe the second largest donor to the DeSantis coffers for his campaign finance is the guy, CEO of the people in Regeneron.
Are you serious?
Oh, I am serious, and it's that simple and that transparent.
That can't be be true.
You wouldn't think so.
I mean, that's so obvious. Well, I mean, everybody should be able to see through that.
Remember what we discussed about the age of nuance?
It's not
here. So anyway, I am just saying I am a total fan of monoclonal antibodies because I know of multiple different, institutions and people that have excellent monoclonal antibodies. And Regeneron is actually one of the wonderful things. Now, they have happened to get, it is appropriate that we at the CDC, the people at the CDC and the NIH and all that have decided this is a wonderful treatment and they're making it available because it really does make a big difference if you can get it.
But what there is should its be
no,
cost?
There should be no strings. Oh, it's very expensive, but it's being covered. Now.
By who?
The taxpayers.
By the taxpayers.
Yeah.
So it's essentially free money.
Well, and the thing is, this shouldn't be connected.
So if you're sick, it's free to you.
Yeah.
But it costs an enormous amount.
It's kind of like those
taxpayers.
Kind of like those hearing aids on TV.
Yes.
Like, this may be, or getting your windshield fixed by the guy with a little suction thing.
Sure.
All right. So, I'm just saying this is something that needs to be looked at because
are you implying that? Somebody is literally ramping up people sitting in beds.
I don't know that. I'm just
ICUs just so that they can use this.
Well, I'm going to tell you that
that's just wrong.
Well, it is wrong. But I'm going to say that there literally are statements from a lot of the folks who are not pushing masking or not pushing vaccines. Who are saying that it's the golden egg or something like that, because it is effective and it's good, but
effective and good if you get sick.
Well, that's right. But I'm saying there needs to be oversight on this whole scenario, because one of the things that as I said, somebody said, you guys look at all these like stock trades and things as if there were something going on. And I'm just saying it's
maybe
possible.
There is something going on.
Okay, so a couple quick things. We're going to blast through these because these stories are too crazy. Ivermectin.
Okay.
I never even heard of Ivermectin. Well, it turns out that all kinds of people are using. This is, again, there can be good science associated with this particular thing called Ivermectin because it's something that's been approved for certain things, right?
Okay.
And it's established that it actually is safe for humans. But basically, you know what it's only used for? It's used to fight. It's used in horses and other things like that to fight worms and all kinds. But an incidental thing that they found was that it's possible.
Parasite infections such as
intestinal worms, lice, and mites. But here's the thing. They recently noted that it's starting to study it because it does seem to affect viruses.
Okay.
And one of the things that could be positive, and I'm not going to poo-poo the idea because this has fallen into the hydroxychloroquine argument. They're saying SARS-CoV-2 virus has to infect your cells. And then it goes on to say that that this particular scientist believe that it works. You know, they're going through the mechanism here. It's kind of complicated, but the point is, this could be something that could work, especially something that could be, you know, useful around the world. Now, the trouble is, it's basically, you know, because the World Health Organization is looking into it, and the whole point is, it's got to be researched. Everybody, and you would think, like, for example, Robert, you would, if I were telling you, hey, listen, you've got a chance to take the virus from Pfizer or Johnson & Johnson or Moderna, right. Or you could go to the, oh, wait a minute, here's our next story, the feed store, let's click the feed store, and you could buy some livestock ivermectin and start taking it.
No.
Okay, I'm just saying, if you had that choice.
So wait. So what's the difference between being taken a known vaccine that's created for human beings for COVID-19 or going to the feed store and taking worm pills for a horse?
I'm going to lay it out for you very simply. Here's
Whoa. What kind of moron would do that?
Well,
what kind of an ignorant person would go, "Oh, I'd rather go to the feed store and get worm pills for my horse, because that'll do it."
Okay.
Oh, come on.
Well, I'm not saying they talked to Mr.
This can't be real.
No, it is real. And here's the thing. The reason why The reason why it is so troubling is that.
Oh, it is troubling.
A lot of people. It's kind of like what happened. You know, people. There is some fact to the point that is being investigated, and the long story short on all the investigations is we don't have enough information.
Right.
To first of all, there may be some efficacy, but in terms of the safety. So anyway, happening in Mississippi is their increase in just read the first sentence. Report has been updated to include information. State health official alert. This is in Mississippi. Increase in incidence of ivermectin poisoning.
Well, it's for a horse. Look at the mass of a horse. These are not small.
Well. What about animals. If I got it for just a pony? Would that be better? No.
Okay. Pony deworming. Yeah. Great idea.
Well, the thing is, people are doing this. And the part that is frustrating is as you put it, listen, let me put it in a less subtle format for you, right?
Oh, good.
Okay, so if you're thinking of treating yourself or preventing COVID, who are you going to trust, your government or the feed store?
Or the feed store. Well, again, this is not designed for human beings.
Well, but that's
this is not a human-tested drug, and unless you can do the math,
well,
and you know what you're doing when you're doing the math, because you take the weight of the average horse and your weight and do the math, doesn't mean it's going to work.
It's not the same metabolism
as a 1-to-1. So I mean, are we getting people that are dead from doing this?
I'm not quite sure, but here, okay. So just because I want to just briefly touch on it, according to the FDA, if you scroll down, you're going to see FDA ivermectin can cause. Okay, now first of all, let me put it in context. So far, it has been pretty much shown that over the millions of people taking the vaccines, you know, nothing serious has shown up.
Right.
Ivermectin can cause seizures,
coma,
and
death.
Now, all three of those are pretty serious.
Yeah, it says, though the Food and Drug Administration, U.S. Food and Drug Administration, has approved ivermectin to treat people with conditions caused by parasitic worms and external parasites like head lice, the FDA warns that the form of ivermectin used to treat animals are not the same product.
Right.
So,
because it's going back to the weight of the. Well, and it's the same thing that happened with the hydroxychloroquine that people were going to the fish.
Yeah, here's
pet
exactly
store.
What I was saying.
Oh, does it
for
down
one
there?
Thing, animal drugs are often highly concentrated because they are used for large animals like horses and cows, which can weigh a lot more than we do, a ton or more. The FDA wrote, such high doses can be toxic to humans.
So that's the whole big thing. Anyway.
Holy,
so listen.
Holy cow.
Well, if you're thinking of getting your horse medicine and taking it,
I say nay. Nay.
Oh, gosh. All right, listen, I've got to get off the planet
for
a few minutes.
You've got to be kidding.
Perseverance. So,
that's just mind-blowing.
The long story short on all this is, as I say, when you have... It boils
trust
down to...
Trust your doctor.
Well, trust... Yeah, but, you know, we're saying trust doctors, trust science, trust, you know... The people that are trying to save your life, and It's not happening every
day. Hey, folks, we here at Radio Science News are not advocating doing stupid things, okay?
Well, I hope not, yeah.
Just get your vaccines,
please. Get your vaccine and because, help yourself and other people.
Because it's part of being a part of the community.
Yeah.
Not taking it means you're separating yourself from the community. And, you know, that's never a very good idea.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to be fun for you. If you are a fan of, you know, the Mars rovers and the different
indeed.
Things that's going on, I know you are, and you are also, you're really big into the geology, and I'm looking at some. This is a wonderful long article. I'm scrolling very quickly because Perseverance has now started. It's got the robotic arm.
Nice images.
Well, when you scroll down a little further, because it says even closer.
Even closer.
They're taking.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Look at that.
Yeah.
I love the blue-hewn rocks and the red, the rusty-hewn mesa. And
is that may be, I don't know, carbon dioxide. I don't know if that's carbon dioxide snow. It looks like almost white deposits.
Wow.
Well, and then look, the part that's really cool is that they're doing close-up images to show the morphology. You're looking
at
one. Close-up image of a rock on the end of the, it's only a 4 centimeter by 3 centimeter thing, and you're seeing, you're seeing this interesting morphology, textured rocks with interesting coating, that might indicate that there's some interaction with water. Now, if you scroll down, then there's one that says, "Is this indication of volcanic or igneous rocks?"
Mysterious holes, light and dark patches,
whether like you know gas has come
crystals.
Up through this crystallization. This is just really
These
cool
are
stuff.
Beautiful images. Look at that.
This is just really the beginning of what we're going to start getting. Oh, this is one where they've actually drilled out, right? Down,
mm-hmm.
If you scroll down further.
Yeah. See, you can actually
it's
see
a borehole.
See the borehole where
look
they
look at
were.
The difference in the color and the composition of what they're looking
yeah.
at.
Yeah. So that the surface has a rusty orange appearance, and the material that's come up looks like a dry a concrete.
Yeah, it's like a grayish, bluish stuff.
Really
anyway, so this is just really excellent stuff. You know, take some time to look through this, and there's going to be a lot more
coming across.
Wow, coming from Perseverance.
Oh, that's just so cool.
So good stuff's happening
on Mars. Thank you. Yep.
The sort of orange planet.
Our tax dollars at work, doing
right.
good science, taking great photographs, learning new stuff.
Now, okay, I mean, since we've been, like I said, we've been a little bit deep in all the COVID news. And one of the things Robert and I understand is there are all kinds of things going on that should make people feel good. There was somebody who came on to one of the shows yesterday talking about how everybody apparently has a grievance about something, and they think that there's all this kind of stuff going around on all the social media about just how terrible things are. And they were stopping to point out, okay, so the people that are posting about how terrible things are have at their disposal a computer that's bigger than what NASA had in a large building. You know, their point is stop whining
it's like,
about.
Shut up.
Okay, so the thing is, this is a page with a lot of stuff. Some people are going to go, okay, you guys were talking about this a lot, and we haven't spent much
time. So this is Rolls-Royce is testing a hybrid aero power and propulsion system. Okay, what's an electric hybrid?
This is for Rolls-Royce is looking at this for an aircraft engine.
Oh, gotcha.
Now,
right,
and the thing
right.
is, if you, right. they give the,
this, I was thinking that this was for the car.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay, because I'm thinking, boy, is this car going to go so fast it's going to fly?
Okay, well, and the reason why this is an interesting story, this is posted on a page that follows ECAT World. It's Rossi. If you're not familiar with that, you're going to have to sort of
you're
dig in.
Going to need to go through the previous
There's a lot of stuff here. The point is there are other sources of innovation in the world of energy, and this is one of them. We've talked a lot about it. But the posting on here is because there's a lot of stuff that seems coincidental with what's going on with the Leonardo Corporation and Rossi and his ECAT, and the fact that Rolls-Royce is right out front talking about carrying on all this kind of stuff here. They're talking about their Testbed 108, the generator, which a lot of people say, look, this could be just a standard you know, people that have a hybrid car understand that maybe you have a hybrid gasoline or hybrid diesel vehicle, mm-hmm. and it'll produce electricity. And, you know, what you're doing there is a very common thing. That I mean, I can remember the first time I saw this type of a hybrid thing was way back in like 1950s or 1960s. It's where they showed that you could take a little standard, like gasoline motor, run a generator, and if you could find the right kind of electric engine, and they had, you know, you could make yourself a hybrid vehicle. And it turns out that was the beginning of a lot of the stuff that we're driving now. You turn on television and they have commercials for all these hybrid everything. Well, Rolls-Royce is looking at the possibilities of incorporating the same kind of technology. At the very least, they're talking about using standard, say, jet fuel mm-hmm. or diesel, you know, and a hybrid thing to run airplane engines. And so I'm going to say that's probably practical right at the level.
Well, I say, yeah.
Well, the thing that is being posited here is they believe it's possible that the Andre Rossi electric generator, and they're talking about testing, and supposedly in November there's going to be some real public, you know, stuff coming
again.
Out.
Very cool.
And that's kind of the discussion going here. Now, of course, if you scroll down, you'll see the arguments back and forth. A lot of people go, oh, come on, this is silly speculation. All it is a well-packed, you know, powerful generator, nothing else. And that's great because people are going back and forth on this. And basically, Robert and I are going to certainly wait till we see more stuff. Now, the other thing I'm going to point to you while we're on the page, well, here's to your right on this page are two things that if you're not sure about this, you know, I think there's a lot to it, but here's the pre-order for the ECAT SK LED light, the most mm-hmm. energy efficient lamp ever made. And when you click on it, what am I getting? I don't want that. You can pre-order the ECAT SK LED light. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that you could read about here. The point of it is that this is using supposedly the ECAT solid state generating electricity. Now, the whole thing about it is people go, oh, yeah, well, these people are just trying to scam and raise money. Well, here's the whole thing. Here's the form. What do you have to pay up front? There it is.
Nothing.
So if you when you want to pre-order, this is a pre-order. For orders and quantities of over 200 lamps, you even can get a discount. But we're talking about for $25. This is supposed to be a lamp that has, I mean, it's kind of like your whole stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to, I just wanted you to know that this is here, and the whole point of it is they're not even going to, until they have a million, or basically the point is nobody's asking for your money or anything. Now, the other thing, I'm going to go back to the page, and this
is... So has, this is the amateur astronomer talking to me.
This is a concern.
Is this going to be, is this going to be a light that's going to be of the right frequency so that it's not going to mess up the night sky?
I think a lot of that will definitely need to be considered, and I'm certainly concerned about. Now, the other thing I'm just going to look at is if you saw the light, the ECAT SK LED, if you look down below, here's another simple thing, because I think we're going to actually, we have a good friend, Scott Ludoff, who mm-hmm. heats a lot of stuff, plastic and all that. But I'm clicking on this, and here's basically... they have taken the model of a company that was kind of controversial as it worked with Rossi, Industrial Heat. The idea is they're going to provide heat. They're not going to let you buy, they're not going to make you buy the device, blah, blah, blah. They basically are using a model for any place where heat is required where they will provide you the service.
Right.
So just a real quick thing, Leonardo Corporation developed a revolutionary heating technology, the ECAT SK. 20 years of research and development based on innovative way to apply the physics of the electron, and then they have a whole thing where you can look through, produce temperature suitable for most current industrial processes without producing carbon emissions or any ionizing radiation.
Right. I love that. In fact, the little thing that you click on says no ionizing radiation, no greenhouse gas emissions, low cost.
Yeah, so this is the whole thing. What they're basically doing, their model is, and they give you a few examples, food and drink production, cement production, space heating, laundry services, petroleum refining. See, we talked about that.
Mm-hmm. A long time ago.
I'm sure Exxon might even be doing paper making, dry, anything that where you use
anything that uses
power
heat.
Stations. Like you could take a coal-fired power plant in the state of West Virginia that has turbines, and you could drive it with this. But the point is, you fill this out and you send them your information, and basically they describe your business and your heating needs, et cetera, et cetera. And you submit the form and they'll they'll get in touch with you. So we may do that just as a little experiment here.
Speaking of which, last week we had a segment, this was on August 14th, 2021, called Thermoelectric.
Yeah.
Where it turned out that
tripled the effective.
Have been able to get three times the electricity from something warm.
Yeah.
Have those two people come into contact yet?
Oh, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're people.
Certainly hope so, because
I don't know though. Who
wouldn't
can
that
say?
Be brilliant?
Who could say?
I'm as a radio science news co-host here, I'm just saying that if you are one of these people, look at August 14th on the Launchpad of Science Thermoelectric. Read through that and then look at Rolls-Royce. Read through that and put the two together.
Oh,
there's your $1 trillion.
Well, I know.
Let's do it. Right.
Well, maybe we should do it. Can we get?
I don't need to do that.
No, you don't need.
I don't want to start a business like that.
No.
But there are people that do.
Well, and it's a wonderful
concept.
And
wouldn't that be a wonderful idea?
It would be. All right. So that's a real interesting. Now there are a whole bunch of other stories here. I'll tell you what. I'm going to take the license to jump from Rolls-Royce to Subaru, because I'm thinking sounds like. I actually own a Subaru, and I've had it for, but I mean, a Rolls-Royce would be okay, too, wouldn't it? I mean,
mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so. I don't know if the insurance might be up. Let's look at Subaru.
Why 6 not and not 7?
Says,
physicists finally have an answer for why the Subaru logo
wait a minute. You're
has only 6 stars instead of 7.
See, I asked Robert last week. I said, you do know that there's an old Subaru. Look how old that is.
That's an old Subaru.
When they first came out.
That's a cute old one.
Oh, this is really cool because, the point is that the Subaru logo, they have a cute little story here. But basically, if you look at the thing, it's been known by several people, mentioned to me that, the Subaru actually logo is derived from the star cluster
Pleiades.
Yeah, and then it goes on and gets a little more in the weeds about how.
And so in the Japanese language, that cluster of stars in the sky has the name Subaru.
Yeah, and then other people were talking about the fact, part of it was that they really meant that it was supposed to be like this, the corporations that made up Subaru. It was like a lot of complicated stuff. But the real story is, wait a minute. Everybody knows or talks about, they go down here, Greek mythology, the Pleiades, known as the Seven Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And they go through the Seven Sisters of the Earth-lifting Titan named Atlas. And now here's the whole point. Only 6 stars are visible, and they're going, wait a minute, they always talk about the 7 sisters and the 7 stars. And so, I've always tried to see it. And I think at one time I'm going, I can't seem to find the other one. What's going on here? But here's the explanation.
It says, so what's going on here? Are there only 6 stars easily visible? The 7th is actually so close to to another star that it really can't be discerned as separate. Okay.
It has to do with the...
All right. Let me pause here. And let's go back in time.
So here we are.
1986.
Okay.
All right. 1986. A good friend of mine from college and secondary school, Ned Bratstrom, came to visit me in American Samoa. Okay. And Ned Bratstrom. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Ted Bratstrom is his friend.
Excuse me, Ned. Ned Bratstrom. So. Ned Bratstrom shows up in American Samoa, the only one of my friends to have come to visit me, because it was
I didn't know you were there.
I know. So we're outside because it was one of the Friday night. I had a 8-inch telescope and a 17.5-inch telescope.
Nice.
And, oh yeah, it was fun. And I was teaching astronomy class at the school, and as the laboratory for the class, I do star watches every Friday night. So Ned comes out and he's standing there, and we're looking around. And he goes, "So what are we going to look at next?" And we're steering around, and I said, "We're going to go to the Seven Sisters." He goes, "Where's the Seven Sisters?" I said, "It's that little star cluster right there."
And
he goes,
"Fuzzy thing."
So why is it called the Seven Sisters? I said, "Well, most people can only see 6 stars, but there's a 7th star kind of close by."
Yeah.
And he goes, 13, 14, 15, 16.
So wait, this guy's starting to count what he can see?
He could see 17 stars. I said, "Oh, that's a crock." And my students are laughing at this guy, right? And, you know, and he's going, no, I can see that. And I'm going, no, you can't, Ned. And so I had a little sign and sheet with red flashlight attached to it. And I said, okay, Ted, draw me what you're seeing.
Before you got the
telescope. Before you look at the telescope, draw me what you're seeing. And Ned Breschel drew the seven sisters like you were looking through a pair of binoculars. He is one of these rare individuals that when you look at the seven sisters, he sees more than seven stars.
So he actually saw the dominance, all including the one that was so close. Okay.
He was seeing seventh magnitude stars. He was seeing 7.5 magnitude stars. Now, this was Samoa. There were the seeing was very, very good. But what must this guy be seeing on a normal nighttime sky?
Yeah.
Blows my mind. So when people say, oh, you can only see six. Oh, no. Ned Breschel could see 16.
He could
maybe
see
17.
Now, when you looked at with the telescope, you could see these in the field around it.
Oh, yes.
Well, that is so cool. Now, the basic thing about this is, and of course, this is what they're basically saying that, did the Greeks get it so wrong or did they have better telescopes? And no, part of it was that, like when they're talking about that far back in time, it says the movement of the stars explains the two puzzles. The similarity of the Greek and the aboriginal stories about these stars and the fact that so many cultures call the cluster Seven Sisters, even though we can really pretty much only see six, it's basically because of the movement that occurs in all these constellations.
So as they're moving closer and closer together, you do only
yeah.
Most people,
you can't
I should
resolve.
Say,
you
most
can't
people
resolve
only see six.
It's a little bit like the Big Dipper, where you have the rider and the horse of the in the handle. If you look, you know, sometimes I know you can see it if you have really good vision, but if you look through a binoculars or telescope, you realize that what you couldn't resolve as two stars really is a binary, you know, up there, or a visual binary. Anyway.
So is that not cool?
It is cool, but I'd like to know how he's doing now. You know,
so in talking to him, it turns out he said, I've had my eyes tested, and I've got better than 20/20 vision.
Yeah,
and he said when he has talked to doctors, it turns out that the fluid in his eyes is clearer than most people have.
Well, and it's also possible that, say, like in terms of his retinal cell makeup,
there might be a greater density of the
closer
of
together, the, smaller,
so
like higher resolution.
So whatever's going on,
that is cool.
He sees things that most people do not normally see with the unaided eye.
Yeah.
So I just, it just mind.
Well, that's what happens when I watch the news. I see things that other people don't see. I don't know if it's a gift or a curse. Well,
I think it's a curse.
Well, I'll tell you what. Since we're sort of looking, we're still staying up in the, the beyond a low Earth orbit, which, you know, most of the time we don't get it. But let's go to. We did a story last week about the moon magnet, where there were issues about magnetism on the moon, and they're trying to it had a lot to do with whether there ever was a magnetic field because of the core, or whether it was because of impacts. This is a separate thing that just popped up, and I said, having talked about it last week, this is really cool. And it says, here comes the sun. Planetary scientists find evidence of solar-driven change on the moon. And I'm intrigued.
Okay. It says, tiny iron nanoparticles, unlike any found naturally on Earth, are nearly everywhere on the moon.
Now, that's exciting. I was not aware of this little
thing. So, would that not... Well, if you had tiny iron nanoparticles on the Earth, they'd start reacting with oxygen and water, and they would rust almost instantaneously.
They would just be chemically obliterated on our planet. So
it says they're found everywhere on the moon, and scientists are trying to understand why. Well, that's why. And
well, that's part
if,
of it. Yeah.
If
well, how did they get there? That's the real
thing. My theory, without reading this, is that when an iron nickel a meteoroid it impacts on the moon and vaporizes.
There's your nano
particles. That you're going to get iron nanoparticles. That's what I think.
Now here's the cool part. Scroll down past the. Do you have a Kroger sticker popping up on yours?
No, I do
not. You have something else.
Okay.
You get down to where it says the what's really interesting is the interaction between these the stuff that you have, like, you know, like you're saying, the rock and the soil and the, and the interaction with solar radiation.
So it says,
as it breaks down other stuff.
Says asteroid impacts and solar radiation affect the moon in unique ways because it lacks a protective magnetic field and atmosphere that protect us here on the Earth. But both asteroids and solar radiation break down lunar rocks and soil, forming iron nanoparticles. Okay.
Oh, this is
so it's the solar radiation, the cosmic rays are
impinging on
impinging and freeing the iron out of the soil. Cool.
And then it goes on talking about the Apollo samples, and they form at a similar rate as radiation damage in samples returning from the Apollo missions to the moon. The sun has a strong influence
in their formation.
Yeah, this is really
cool.
That
makes perfect sense. Yeah, with solar wind, yeah, it goes right down to the surface.
Oh, and then what do they say, Robert? Again, NASA's preparing to land the first woman and the next man on the surface of the moon as part of the Artemis mission. I'm telling you, you and I have talked about those folks so much.
I hope the funding lasts.
Hope it works out. Anyway,
yeah, me too.
That is really cool.
That's awesome. So it's not just the meteoroid impacts. It's the cosmic rays. It's the solar wind, and everything combining together to turn the soil over and loosen up the iron. That's cool. That's very cool. And if that were on the Earth, it would disappear. I mean, in the blink of an eye.
And the other thing that's interesting, it says that since iron absorbs a lot of light, the very small amounts of these particles can be detected from very far away, making them a great indicator of change on the moon. Very cool stuff.
That's very cool stuff.
Anyway, I think that's about all the space I could. Now, I got to say, we saw some. There are a couple. I found this first little animal story about the structure of fish fins.
Okay.
Because I was fishing, you know, this last week, and you know, I'm a total catch and release guy. You know, if
sure.
I catch anything at all, I release a shout of joy.
So you're the kind of guy that doesn't use barbed hooks, I hear.
That's right. We were talking about that last
yes.
week. Anyway, this is a really cool thing because they have a picture of a little goldfish here, just a little common goldfish. But when people look at, I love stuff that's what we call biomime or biomimetic, where they look at, they wonder what makes, here's the question, what makes fish fins so strong yet flexible, right?
Okay.
And so it goes down through, there's a long story here. It tells you to go peer into a fishbowl. I've said that to people too. But
stare into a fishbowl, and after you're done, you can get back to me.
But this whole thing about the structure of what they're determining about the structure, the organic, you know, here we have a, it says fish move the structures by twitching sets of muscles located at the base of the fins. But he has all these weird stiff rays, and they can be manipulated individually. And the long story short is they're now seeing the possibility for all kinds of just really amazing things in terms of structures, whether it's armor or airplane wings. Because they're talking about, it's a little bit like an airplane where you can drop your flap, you know, could change. It says, except you're moving a solid thing in some. These are things that actually, it says your airplanes can do this when you drop your flaps. But that's in a rigid way. A wing made out of a morphing material, in contrast, could change its shape radically and in a continuous manner, much like, you know, a bird does its individual feathers and things. And I was also thinking, I was watching something with turtles swimming in the ocean, and the way, you know, it's not like a single shape thing. It's something that you can see is constantly, they can change it subtly to do different things, you know, so. Anyway, there's a whole thing about what they call hemitrix.
Your thing is 25 seconds off of my thing.
Well, this would just be the length of.
So are we gonna? Are
we'll
we
stop right stop? At one. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's the, that's just my my audio file time length there.
I just want to make sure that.
All right.
I'm
so this
doing
is a really cool thing, but I want to say we just have a couple minutes left. There's some really cool stuff, but the. The rattlesnake one, since I'm a musician,
I'm always
thinking about sound things.
Rattlesnake rattle tricks human ears. It tricks human ears?
It tricks human ears. Oh, I see we're down to like 1 minute left, so you can start your theme song if you want. Okay, and I'll tell you what, we're going to touch on this later, but this is such a good story. Rattlesnakes are tricky.
Rattlesnakes are tricky.
And here's what's tricky. Forget the humans.
All right.
Rattlesnakes evolved... with a rattle that knowing that, say, like a big buffalo was approaching you.
All right.
It says they literally change the frequency mode of their rattle in a way that will confuse the, like a buffalo or something, to make it sound, it's like almost like a ventriloquist. It, the sensation
so it
is that
it's
closer.
Like somewhere else?
Makes it sound like it's actually closer.
Oh, so
depending
they back
on,
away.
But literally depending on the rate of the clip-clop coming mm-hmm. towards it. Very complex. We'll touch
wow.
on this again.
Okay,
this
okay.
is
that
fascinating.
That sounds really cool.
Anyway, thanks for visiting, and I hope you'll visit with us again. Radio.